The Air Force's 53rd Weather Reconnaissance Squadron spends its summer and fall flying into hurricanes. In the winter, it flies around blizzards to measure wind speed and trajectory. Federal News Radio's Scott Massioni caught up with the squadron's chief meteorologist, Lieutenant Colonel John Talbot, to find out just how they do it.
This unit is here to take care of the problem of forecasting hurricanes and where they're going to go and how strong they are. So our job in life is to provide about 90%, 95% of the operational data collection for hurricanes during the summer months for the National Hurricane Center in Miami, Florida. And we do that with 10 aircraft. We have 20 crews here at Keesler Air Force Base. Out of those 20 crews, 10 are full-time crews. So we have a slightly larger number of full-time crews in a typical Air Force Reserve organization. So the 53rd Weather Reconnaissance Squadron is part of the Air Force Reserve here at Keesler Air Force Base, and we're responsible to provide 95% of the operational data collection for the National Hurricane Center in Miami, Florida.
And then also you have a winter function as well. Would you mind kind of telling me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So during the winter months, the squadron is tasked to provide data to the National Weather Service for societal impact winter storms. And we do that along the East Coast, the Gulf of Mexico, and out in the Pacific Ocean occasionally. So when we have these strong winter storms, which, by the way, kill more people actually than hurricanes do, we fly these tracks over the ocean and we drop instruments out over these areas where these storms are forming. And the idea is to provide this data to the computer forecast models that the National Weather Service use to forecast the intensity of these storms, how much snow is going to fall, how much impact is there going to be. And what a lot of people don't realize is the cost of these systems. For example, New York City, it costs them $1 million an inch of snow to clean the streets, remove that snow, and, make travel safe for folks. So it's a big, gigantic cost issue also. We do this during the months of November through March, typically when you'd have these types of snowstorms.
So how far ahead do you have to get of these storms, and how do you know that they're coming? Like, is there a certain point that you jump in and say, okay, this is going to be a storm, or, how do you know it's not just, a small system?
Right. That's a good question. So all our tasking, all our missions are tasked, per se, by a group that resides at the National Hurricane Center. They're called CARCA. What that acronym means is Chief Aerial Reconnaissance All Hurricanes. And we have three people that are there, and they coordinate with either the National Hurricane Center or the National Weather Service. So for the winter storm mission, the National Weather Service makes the decision based on what they're seeing in their computer model forecasts. If they see a storm looks like it's going to develop and cause a huge impact, they typically let us know several days in advance, and we typically fly those tracks a day to 2 days in advance of the actual storm developing.
And so this sounds like it's a pretty large area. Do you fly completely out of Keesler Base, or how does that work, and how do you get these planes to where they need to be?
Right. So for the hurricane mission, there could be a hurricane coming across the Atlantic Ocean, something that forms here in the Gulf of Mexico, or as we saw last summer, a storm out in the Pacific near Hawaii. We go wherever the storms are. So in the Atlantic, we have several operating areas that we can fly from. Obviously, we can fly from here at home in Mississippi, and we can typically reach, everything in the Gulf of Mexico, out off the East Coast, or even down into the Western Caribbean. If the storms are further out in the Atlantic, we typically operate out of the U.S. Virgin Islands, and we'll fly down there and take three airplanes, crews and maintenance people and so forth, and we'll operate out of a location in the Caribbean for as long as we need to, maybe a week, while that storm is out there and moving past. And then we just go wherever the storm moves. So if it moves up towards the U.S. East Coast, we'll move back here to our primary base here in Mississippi, and we'll fly it out of here. We'll deploy airplanes to Hawaii, and we did that four or five times last summer. It was the busiest season we've ever had in the Pacific. So we go wherever the storms are. So during the winter months, typically we fly out of our home base in Mississippi, because most of these tracks are 10 to 12 hour long tracks that we can reach from here. So we'll depart out of here, maybe fly around the Gulf of Mexico, or maybe fly a track off the East Coast up towards New York City area and then back down. So it's more of a, we don't typically have to deploy unless we go out into the Pacific Ocean and fly a mission out in that region.
Right. I'm sure you were really busy last winter with Boston.
Yeah, well, last winter was a pretty busy winter storm season. It wasn't the busiest for us. Now, they got a lot of snow and stuff up there. But, what we try to do is take the uncertainty out of the forecast by providing this extra data. If the models are working very, very well, and the uncertainty is not very high, and the way they figure that out is they have multiple computer models that look at weather forecasts, that forecast the weather. And if all those models are saying the same thing, the certainty is pretty high that that's what's going to happen. So our job is, when there isn't a lot of certainty, when the models are diverging on what they think is going to happen, and then they have us provide this extra data, because the models are only as good as the data you stick into them, and there's lots of areas out over the oceans, obviously, where there is no information. So satellites provide some of it, but there isn't a lot out in those types of areas, and that's where we come into play. So last winter, actually, the models did very, very well at forecasting a lot of that snow, so we didn't have a lot of extra missions up in, say, the Boston area, because the forecast was not, it was a very certain thing that heavy snow was going to happen many times. I'd say we had probably 8 or 9 missions last winter that we did for that part of the country.
What kind of data are you collecting that adds to the certainty? You know, is it barometric pressure? Is it temperatures? What are you collecting?
Right. So we have lots of different types. So when we do the hurricane mission, the interest there is, how strong is the hurricane right now? Which way is it moving? How is it changing while you guys are out there? And we have a sensor suite on the airplane that includes things like temperature, pressure, humidity, wind speed, wind direction at the altitude the airplane is flying at. And we have an instrument out on the wing that provides us, it's a remote wind sensor that looks down on the ocean surface, and it tells us what the wind speeds are on the ocean surface, which is critically important in a hurricane, because those are the winds that move ashore over a coastal area and cause the damage. It's not the wind that's 10,000 feet up where the airplane's at. It's the wind that's on the water. So this instrument provides updates on wind speeds every several seconds as we're flying. We also have an instrument that we drop out of the aircraft that provides data in the vertical from the airplane altitude all the way down to the surface as it falls. And we do that, we drop that instrument several times during a hurricane mission. One of the critical places we typically drop it is inside the eye. And that provides us with the sea level pressure in the eye of the hurricane. So when you see on TV, hey, this hurricane is coming and the central pressure is this, that comes from that drop zone instrument. And that instrument is critical in providing that piece of information, because the airplane typically can't fly down low over the ocean surface in a strong storm to get that reading. We have to use the instrument and get it remotely. So we have those several instruments, and then we also have buoys that we drop out in front of hurricanes out over the ocean, with the thought that the hurricane is going to get close and run over those buoys. It provides extra information of what's going on the surface when a storm goes by. And we have ocean instruments that we also drop out that go down under the ocean, and they measure things like water temperature down to a depth of maybe 1,000 feet or so. And those instruments are critical for those computer models, because the ocean and the atmosphere are kind of coupled together in providing, the energy for a hurricane. So we need to know what's going on in the atmosphere and under the ocean for those types of storms. For the winter storm mission, it's basically just a high-level mission where we drop in those drop sound instruments and we get those that vertical information from the airplane's altitude all the way down to the surface. And that's the exact same thing as what the Weather Service does every day by launching weather balloons. The problem is, out over the ocean, there is no weather balloon reports which provide all the data to the computer models because there's nobody out over the ocean. We don't have an armada of ships out there launching these balloons, so we use the aircraft to drop a lot of these instruments to try to figure out how much energy is available in the atmosphere for the winter storms. So a lot of different types of data, and all of the data is fed to the National Hurricane Center folks. That office I was mentioning called CARCA, we have a satellite ground station there, and all our data flows via satellite link to them in real time, and then they take the information and they feed it out to the various customers that need it, the Hurricane Center forecasters, the National Weather Service, and so forth, or the general public. You can see it, you know, sitting there on your couch by logging into your computer and going to some of these websites where the data is available.
So do you have certain software that kind of consolidates all these different numbers and puts it together? Or how does that turn into that physical thing that we actually see?
Well, what we provide is the numbers. And there are versions, you know, there are pieces of software out there, websites that take that information and turn it into something that you can understand. And, you know, there's probably a half a dozen of websites that are out there that do that. But in general, for the computer models want numbers. And they want, you know, they take the raw information and then they crunch it through their algorithms. And they take all these weather balloon reports that happen all around the world each day, which are basically just numbers. And it provides these things called grids, maybe 5 miles in square of what the conditions were in each one of these grids all the way around the world. And then these computer models know what's going on, and then they, through their algorithms, they forecast out what's going to happen over the next couple days based on how the atmosphere works. And so for the general public, however, yeah, you can go to websites and they break down the information into, you know, readable format that, hey, this is what the temperature was at this altitude, this is what the wind speed was on the surface, this is what the maximum wind speed was in the hurricane so far since they've been flying, and so forth. We've really had a gigantic upgrade. So years ago, when I first started, we were using this aircraft called the WC-130E and H model, and these were aircraft that were built in the 60s. And they had all analog, you know, instrumentation and so forth. And we actually had to write things down like, what's the temperature outside right now at this altitude? What's the wind on a piece of paper? And then we would radio that information in. Well, we've come forward quite a bit since then. And now we've, back in the late 90s, we were the first Air Force flying organization to get the C-130J, which is the latest version of the C-130 aircraft, and ours is called a WC-130J. It's a totally digital airplane with digital avionics. Computers run the whole aircraft, just like a commercial aircraft. You know, everything is on video displays, and the data that we collect now is also automated via a computer system we have on the airplane and an operator. All that data flows in every second that we're flying and gets recorded and gets thrown up to our satellite radio and out to the National Hurricane Center. So we're flowing data to them all the time. The wind instrument that we have on the airplane that reads the surface winds, called the stepped frequency microwave radiometer, that instrument was under about 30 years of development and finally went operational in about 2006. And we've had all the aircraft installed with that instrument by 2007. So that was a big technological feat, because now we were able to map remotely the entire area under a hurricane. What are those winds on the ocean surface? So there's no question anymore about how strong the winds are going to be when a storm comes ashore, because the aircraft are out there measuring actually what's going on right as the storm is making landfall. So that's a huge impact to the local emergency management folks that are in an area where a storm is going to be coming ashore because they know what to expect and they know where they need to evacuate people from. So the technology increase of all this automated data has basically gone into really helping to save lives because there's a lot less uncertainty now with what's going on. And the forecast of where a hurricane's going to go has dramatically the resolution of that forecast has dramatically increased. We're down now 3 days out to probably 50 to 75 miles. And you can go to the National Hurricane Center's website, and they publish what their current statistics are. But it's very small. Years ago, it was like 100 to 200 miles. So you'd have a hurricane warning that was over a huge area, coastline, several hundred miles of coastline. And the idea was anywhere within that warning area, the storm could go. Well, now we've been able to take that warning. The Hurricane Center has been able to produce a warning that is much smaller in size, really is just the area that is going to be affected by the storm. And that saves a huge amount of cost when it comes to, you know, evacuating people and so forth. And part of this whole deal is the expense of a hurricane warning. The last figure I heard was typically it costs the U.S. government $192 million every time there's a landfalling hurricane. And that's just for the preparation and getting people out of the way and activating the emergency management folks and the whole deal that goes with preparing for a storm. So the cost of what we do is sort of peanuts in the big scheme of things, but it makes a huge impact in saving quite a bit of money when a storm makes landfall.
Right, that certainty is paramount.
Right, yeah. The average cost to just evacuate, say like an area around Miami, Florida, is about $1 million a mile. So if you have a hurricane warning that covers, you know, 100 miles of coastline from, say, the Keys up through Palm Beach or so in Florida, that's, you know, at $1 million a mile in a highly populated area, that adds up very, very quickly. And, you know, the idea is if you can make that hurricane warning very small or only where it's really needed, you can avoid having to, you know, that extra cost of evacuating people or shutting businesses down and loss of commerce if you don't really have to. So, the cost of doing this with the aircraft typically on a yearly basis is only $25 million in total. So it makes a big difference in the overall, you know, cost of the storm, and people believe the information from an airplane because we're actually measuring it. So they tend to take action when they hear, well, the aircraft just measured 115 mile an hour winds. And, you know, most people, that's all they need to hear is, all right, we're leaving. So, you know, it makes a difference when it comes to saving lives and everything else.
Right, right. Well, for my final question, I'm wondering, and I'm sure everyone else is wondering, what's it like to fly into a hurricane, and what do you feel, what do you experience, and what do you see when you're out there?
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting experience. You know, most air crew people or most pilots, you know, they're told to avoid bad weather. And, you know, in the commercial airlines, that's what they try to do because they want to keep it comfortable for the passengers. And in our case, you know, we go looking for it or we go flying right through it, and we have to get, you know, to get into the eye of a hurricane, you've got to fly through all the real nasty stuff that's around that. So what it typically feels like is you go through these bands of rain intermixed with these areas where it's not raining, and a hurricane's made up of all these bands in this big circle until you get to the eye, which is typically one ring of really bad thunderstorms and really strong winds right around the center. So, for example, last summer when we were flying into Hurricane Joaquin out in the Atlantic near the Bahamas, and you may have heard about that storm that sunk a huge 800-foot freighter that was on its way from Florida down to Puerto Rico. Well, we were out there the day after that incident happened, and the storm was almost a Category 5 hurricane. It was intensifying again. It was between a Category 4 and 5. And as we were flying through the rain bands, you know, you hit a rain band, the airplane goes up. It's like a roller coaster. You get into this updraft, and we go up, and then we get on the other side, and we go down. And then we hit the wind shear around the eye of the storm, which kind of throws the airplane sideways a little bit. So it's a little bit bumpy. It's a little bit more bumpy than your typical airline flight, and, you know, you have to have your seatbelt on because you'll get thrown around if you're not. The crews are very, very well trained. Our guys really are very well experienced at understanding how the airplane reacts in this type of situation. So we generally fly very slow as we typically can, but not too slow that, you know, the plane's going to fall out of the sky by any means. And, you know, we ride it through, and we try not to force the plane to go in any particular direction if it gets really bumpy. We just wait until the turbulence subsides, and it usually does in 30 seconds or so, and then we continue on into the center. An interesting thing that happens, though, in a hurricane is the pressure is extremely low in the center, and the plane is flying along on a pressure surface. So we go downhill, actually, into the center of the storm. The airplane actually goes down in altitude. It thinks it's still at the same altitude, but its real altitude is actually decreasing. And as we fly out of the eye, we go up. And this became very dramatic last year during a mission into Hurricane Patricia, which was in the Pacific. And you may have heard about that storm. It was the strongest storm that has ever been recorded in the Western Hemisphere, in this part of the world. Our guys flew into it in the middle of the night and measured a pressure of 879 millibars and winds at the aircraft altitude and with the instrument that measures the winds on the surface of 200 miles per hour. And those guys, they, I think, descended probably about 2,000 feet in real altitude going into the eye of that storm. That's how low the pressure was. And it was a very, you know, very rough, intense flight. But, you know, you let the airplane go where it's going to go, and you just try to keep the wings level, and, you know, you do stuff like that. So it gets pretty dramatic, and at night you see lightning and everything else. So I wouldn't say enjoyable ride, but it's definitely interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you have some great pilots with some strong stomachs.
Well, we have a lot of people with strong stomachs, but we also have a lot of people that have a huge amount of experience doing this, and we train them. You know, we spend a lot of time on their training, so they know, you know, pretty much what to expect and how to handle the aircraft in situations that, you know, that most people don't have to experience. There was a couple aircraft last year that you may have heard about in the news. One, I believe it was in near the Singapore, that actually crashed and they lost it. It got into a top of a thunderstorm, and it got into some really bad weather. And then a French airliner several years back that was going from Brazil back to France and got into some really bad weather, thunderstorms, and ended up also being lost. So, you know, we're pretty cognizant of what can happen in these types of storms, so we provide a lot of extra training just for this specialized type mission.